Dr. Marcy Bowers is an OBGYN surgeon with a practice in Burlingame, and she's a global leader in her field. She says she's the first surgeon who's undergone gender reassignment surgery and now performs it on others. 22 years into marriage as a husband and father, Bowers underwent her own surgery, and today she's performed it 1,500 times all over the world. She's also a leader in clitoral reconstruction, using surgery to help women who've undergone female genital cutting, mostly in Africa. I visited Bauer in her office and asked her about this cultural tradition. And a note to our listeners, this interview does contain some graphic descriptions.
Genital cutting, or as it's also called, female genital mutilation, they describe a ritual excision of all or part of the female vulva. And it's done primarily in Islamic countries, although it's not a religious procedure per se. It's more of a cultural tradition. There are over 130 million women worldwide affected. So I think it's important, though, that we refer to that, though, as genital cutting rather than genital mutilation, in that I think that as a Westerner on the outside, somewhat, but willing to help, that we use something less pejorative. And even though, yes, it is mutilation, yes, it seems very cruel and unusual, but it's still Western eyes judging a practice that's done largely in families, largely in small communities throughout a large portion of Africa. At first, you know, I had a lot of misconceptions, as I'm sure a lot of people, a lot of listeners still do about the practice. One is that I thought that it was a way of, you know, men controlling women's sexuality, and it was an age-old theme of male domination. And but in terms of an overt goal, it really was not necessarily a male-perpetrated procedure. Rather, it was a cultural tradition, much like a rite of passage, as we see in bat mitzvahs and quinceanera parties, or even male circumcision to that extent, although the anatomical excisions are much different in male circumcision compared to FGM. Mm-hmm. FGM involves removing much or all of the labia and or the clitoris. Now, fortunately, the clitoris is large, and much larger than we are led to believe. So this allows itself, this is the opportunity we have as surgeons to find the rest of that clitoris, which literally is like finding the tip of the iceberg. I mean, what's missing is the tip of the iceberg, and we have so much there left that we can bring forward to restore feeling.
So it would take a lot of courage, a lot of guts, to come forward and say, I had this done to me and I want it changed. So how did you find the women to help? What was that like? Did they come to you? Did you seek them?
Well, as you point out, Hannah, you know, it's definitely something that's deeply personal. So there are still pressures, whatever they are, to continue the practice and to not come forward. But what draws women to come forward, so they all come to me. We don't recruit patients necessarily, but they're aware of me. If you search FGM or you search clitoral reconstruction, my name will come up. And that's just because of the work we've done and the publicity we've brought to the topic. But they come to us. And the reason they do is for two reasons. One is for because they're frustrated sexually. They can't feel anything. They have pain with any sexual contact. The obstructed labors and things. Sometimes things are sewn so tightly that you can't even insert a tampon. Urine is obstructed, you know, because of the webbing that's created by the infibulation. So because of these things, women come forward. But the main reason they come, which is really the most fascinating, is they seek a restoration of their own identity. In other words, they feel as though the clitoral excision had taken part of their identity. And so they don't feel whole as women. And they're looking for some sense of that being validated or brought back. Mm-hmm.
And again, if we talk about immigrant populations here in the U.S., are they coming also to you for these kinds of services and for this help?
Yes, absolutely. So where patients come from here in the U.S. are primarily women who have had FGM in their home countries and then have emigrated here. So I think the fascinating thing is that the majority of them have had FGM done in their home countries while they were living there. But a disturbing number are coming, perhaps 20% of the patients I've seen, where they were raised in the U.S. but went home to visit relatives in Africa and then, against their parents' wishes here, were found to be uncircumcised, and then a party was arranged and they too were cut. This is so-called vacation cutting.
Which has been in the news recently.
Very much so. And, you know, how do we put laws into place about this, and how do we make that, you know, something that is clearly a violation of international law?
I also heard in many of the African communities where a woman would come to the United States, a bride or a woman of childbearing age, and she would, you know, look for an OBGYN. And the OBGYN that first day is kind of startled by what he or she is seeing. And then these women kind of retreat and are embarrassed. And so they start, you know, asking the women around them, who's yours? Who's your, you know, gynecologist who knows about this, who can deal with it? Have you heard those kind of stories? And is there any kind of diversity training that can happen here in the U.S. to help gynecologists understand what this is?
Well, your description is very apt, and I've heard it many, many, many times. An OBGYN looks, and the poor patient, you know, with their legs open, looks down, and the doctor's eyes are, you know, there's this mix of horror and bewilderment that they don't really know what they're looking at. And unfortunately, there are, although there's a general recognition by OBGYNs in this country of what things are, that this does happen, there's still a sense they don't really know exactly what to do.
There's a sense historically of the white person coming to save the people of Africa. How do you stay sensitive to that and to the culture? Is that hard to do?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's really important. But I think that this is what drives me is that I, in my own practice, in my own life, philosophy is the celebration of diversity, and that diversity across sexuality, across gender identity, across race, they are all unifying factors, and each corner of diversity is something to be celebrated. So that's how I work in my basic life, and so I'm not there as a savior. I'm not there to do anything other than really just do my job. But I think it's also not charging for any of this work is also really important to stay grounded. That's the only way you can really take the emotion out of it, in the sense of there's no profit to be gained or lost from this. This is strictly, I'm strictly a tool of whoever can use my services. I don't want it replaced. I mean, I don't want it, I think the notion of having this party and the celebration and all, I think that's beautiful. I think the cultural aspects of it are beautiful. But what has to be replaced are the long-term damages to the lives of the women. Because I believe that sexual feeling is like other senses of the body. And it's just as important as sight, sound, smell, touch. We all have it. It's all a wonderful part of life. And it should be experienced by all people.